Welcome, everyone, to Fantastic Geeks Pop Culture Podcast. My name is Matt, and joining me as always is Pete. Hiya, Pete.
Hey, Matt, what's going on? Hey, everybody.
Not too much is going on here, Pete, other than living in the after bliss of New York Comic Con. Our topic for today, our thoughts and reflections on a couple of wild and crazy days there at New York Comic Con. So, Pete, are you ready to jump in on this?
It was a hell of a weekend, man. It's time to debrief.
Absolutely. If we haven't done enough debriefing lately. Well, Pete, I'll start things off. I went, I flew solo on Friday and got up there about 9:15, which I, you know, they say the floor opens at 10, so I was a bit surprised that I just kind of wandered on in. Of course, since I had a pro badge, I was able to use the blue door, which had, you know, like no line. And got through security quite fast. They kind of did a quick ancillary check of my bag. And with that, I just kind of started to walk around. The convention floor, if you will, was not open, nor was Artist's Alley. But kind of the walkways between everything was open. And it was this kind of surreal experience because most of the people who were there were online at the Starbucks inside. Mm-hmm. So I just basically, I mean, there was maybe 100 people milling around who weren't on one line or another, and just kind of got to get a lay of the land, see where everything was at, talked to a couple of the workers. And then at one point, I guess I was on the, what you'd call the second floor, and I got, there's kind of a window overlooking the area that later on in the day would be kind of where the long line was to get into the main stage. There was kind of like a holding area. And there were like, I can't give a number, 3,000, 4,000 people just in line there. That was the holding area to get into the floor. They had kind of, you know, done that because obviously there was nothing on the main stage. So there was a couple of us kind of at the window area looking and taking a picture. And then as we start taking pictures, there's like a couple thousand people waving for the camera. It was this kind of surreal experience. With that, the floor opened. I made a beeline for the collectible vendor that was selling Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. badges. And I kept going back and forth. Should I spend the $50? And I was like, you know what? I never get this stuff. This will be a fun little thing, especially in light of the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast. Got the badge. They were actually great. They had a little like Velcro suit, like it was, you know, Velcro down the back, and they put it on. So it kind of looked like I was wearing a suit jacket for the picture. Mm-hmm. And the personalized ID was, you know, printed out on, you know, on the plastic badge pretty quickly. And it was, I mean, you've seen the badge, Pete. I thought it, turned out nicely.
It did. I was impressed with their setup, even though I did not partake in those credentials.
And actually, it was funny because talk about serendipity. I was texting back and forth with friend of the podcast, Michelle, who first joined us way back on the Alcatraz podcast, and somebody who I've never met, but just, you know, spoken to on Twitter. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'm getting this S.H.I.E.L.D. badge. It's at, you know, it's in row 1800 and so on and so forth. And I'm just kind of standing there like, all right, what's next? And I see this familiar face and I'm like, excuse me, are you Michelle? And we just had this moment where it's like, hey, you know, nice to meet you after having exchanged emails and tweets and texts for like, I mean, shoot, Pete, the Alcatraz podcast would have started 2 years ago this January, right?
Yep.
So that was certainly a nice moment. Got to chit chat with her for a little bit. Then I kind of walked the floor a bit and you know, we'll save some of our floor discussion for when you come into the story, Pete. but then I partook my first panel, which was the Falling Skies panel. And now, Pete, I know, you know, you introduced me to Falling Skies. And if you had a wish list, who would you want at the Falling Skies panel at New York Comic Con on a Friday at about noon or 12:30?
You know, give me Noah Wiley. Give me Will Patton. I happen to think it's a show on TV that has excellent young actors. In the three sons who play Noah Wiley's children. I mean, you could go a lot of ways there. Give me Karen, you know, maybe some Moon Bloodgood. I hitting any of these, Matt?
Well, Pete, here's who was initially announced, at least in the New York Comic Con app, was the director of special effects and the guy who plays all the skitters, which are kind of the main kind of bug, beetle bug creatures on the show, if you haven't seen it. Two other people came out. One looked kind of tall and lanky and kind of very familiar. The other was a guy with a beard who I was sitting there saying, who is this guy? I can't quite place him. Then the awful moderator from TVGuide.com, who just had no sense on how to speak, introduced everybody. The tall, lanky guy was Doug Jones, who Pete from Falling Skies played Cochise.
Yes.
Played Cochise also.
A member of the Volm race, an alien who was introduced at the very end of season two. And he's a season three character.
So it was great seeing him. He also played Abe Sapien in the Hellboy movies and the Silver Surfer. And then at least two of the creatures in Pan's Labyrinth. So I was like, oh, that's who that guy is. And
motion then, caption veteran.
Well, not just motion capture, but also just kind of like creature, like put him in a full latex bodysuit from his toes to his face and whatnot.
Not easy, you know, a TV, and though he's done film too, you know, version of the gentleman who's played Gollum, I would suppose.
Yes, I think that's definitely a good way to put it. Turns out that the bearded guy who had to quickly put on sunglasses because he told us he had forgotten that it's the law in New York to have a whole bunch of tequila the night that you land. That was David. That's what he said. That was David Icke, who is the season four showrunner and also was the creator isn't the word, but he was the co-producer and the co, I forget what the exact noun was that Ron Moore used to use, but he was the co-guy on
XO
Battlestar.
On the Battlestar Galactica, right?
Indeed. And Falling Skies is a solid show. I definitely felt a little bit like you went from one of the most provocative and profound shows of the first decade of this century to like season four showrunner for Falling Skies. No disrespect.
He has been on and with the show in a producing capacity for its first 3 years. And the crew is very, Galactica heavy. You know, it's not a massive spoiler, Matt, because he doesn't do much, but Colonel Ty shows up very briefly in like two episodes of season three.
War? That's my Colonel Ty impression.
Yeah, I think you need to work on that a little bit.
You listen up here. Anyhow, so the panel's focus.
Listen up, you bastards.
You can't speak to my wife that way. The panel was focused on kind of the special effects, both practical and digital. So right there, it's not like the most awesome topic. I personally enjoyed it. You know, they were talking about the different visual things they do, particularly with, you know, the practical end, the creature effects. That was great fun. There was a story about how, you know, the skitter actor had played the skitter or the skitters in the first couple episodes. At the very least, the pilot, and then the studio was like, yeah, this guy is kind of like expensive. Let's just hire some guy in Toronto. They did the first season in Toronto to like put on the makeup and wave his arms around. And like they fought it. And then, you know, the studio finally got its way. And like four episodes later, they're like, why are the skitters awful? And they're like, because you just have some guy in a suit. You don't have an actor who can. You don't have a creature actor. You have a guy in a suit. So they brought this guy back, and he made the comment that earlier in this week, you know, the week of New York Comic Con, that because he's played all the skitters. So he had died for the 20th time, which got a good chuckle. Doug Jones was great. You know, whenever he'd start talking, his arms would be moving, and he's such an expressive guy that I think almost you need to cover him in a rubber suit and makeup to, like, tamp down that energy. It's like a laser, like that. That 4 hours, 6 hours, 10 hours in the makeup chair focuses him to be a great creature actor. Whereas if it's just Doug Jones playing a guy, he's going to be like wild and crazy. So it was fun. It was what it was, and it was a ton of fun. They gave out a like moon squishy balls that say Falling Skies, because season four has a lot to do with the moon or something. So it was, I think you would, you know, I think you would have enjoyed it, Pete.
Definitely. I did follow the live tweeting of that panel. Just could not make it Thursday or Friday. Was not in my schedule.
By the way, fair is fair. You know, at the conclusion or towards the conclusion of that panel, since it's on TNT, they showed a preview for another show that's going to come out when Falling Skies is out. It's going to be like not a companion in terms of the story, but like, you know, watch these two shows back to back. It's called the, oh, I've already forgotten it. It's the
something. The Last Ship.
The Last Ship, yes. And I have to say, it looks really good. The basic premise is Navy destroyer out in Antarctica doing something kind of secrety that the crew doesn't know about, but they're in radio silence for 4 months. And then, like, they call scientist lady back to the boat. They're like, all right, we're going home. Yippee. And they dial home, and it's like, oh, like, where's the president? It's like, the president died 5 weeks ago. The vice president died 3 days later. There's a global pandemic that you didn't know scientist lady was researching. And then there's this great moment, which is way too much. It's like, when you left, it was at level 2. Now, cut to close up, it's at level 6. But it looks like
thank God, Matt, we're level 7.
Indeed. It looks like great fun. It really, really, I mean, great fun, not kind of in like, it's wild and crazy, but it looks like it's, you know, it's kind of like Walking Dead, but without zombies, and a little bit more like, you know, mix some Navy action in there and a little bit more like hopeful. So it looks fun. It looks like it's like could be a great summer show. It's not Falling Skies in that it's kind of depressing, the world is over, fight the aliens, but it's that kind of similar, like, how are we going to rebuild? But a little bit more hopeful, a little bit more like, aye, aye, Captain. And insofar as they showed the preview to get people excited in it, I'm excited right about that show.
Hey, I'll take a bite, you know. But back to Falling Skies real quick, a show that, you know, while I did introduce you to it, I've had a love-hate relationship with it. 10 episode seasons, particularly the way TNT tends to present them, they usually give you the first 2 hours together and the last 2 hours together. This was a rare year they did not do that. So literally, it's like a 6 or 7 week season. It goes really, really
wow
quick. They're going to 12 or 13, did I hear you say?
I think Ike said 12.
Okay.
And I want to totally
and the fact
agree
that they showed a trailer, which was very heavy, and again, you don't have the perspective because you've not seen season 3, was very heavy on clips from season 3, but there was stuff that I had not seen yet. I'm current through season 3 that are coming. So certainly looks interesting. I think the panel, for all intents and purposes, did its job. And the fact that we're talking about this in October and the show doesn't come on until June.
I think they said they're in episode 3 right now, maybe 4. So it just gives you a sense of where they're at. And I'll just echo what you said, you know, having seen the first 2 seasons on DVD, it's rarely great, and there's time it overall is good. There's times that you're just like, that's poor, that's just like, oh, come on, but it's so darned original. It really is a novel on TV. It's got a slow pace, it slowly unfolds things. The shocking hooks are really effective. They don't happen every episode, but when you do get shocked, it's quite good. So I'd say it's kind of, you know, if you're going to watch it, as you say, you know, if it's 10 episodes, but it happens over 7 weeks or whatever the season 4, you know, format is going to be. But it's the kind of thing like over the summer, like if you're going to be watching live, yeah, check it out for those 8 weeks and have your fun and then be like, okay, I'm putting that back in the box and I'll think about it, you know, next June. So with that, Pete, I'll quickly move on to there was a nice moment there on Friday where as I was walking around the floor, bumped into another friend of the podcast who on Twitter is Dan Mulderlock. We walked around for a bit. It was his first con. After that, as I started to head back towards the train station, we got a slice of pizza, good old, you know, New York pizza pie. And overall, I just left Friday with a smile on my face. I had a nice time, even though I was alone without you there, Pete. It was, it was just kind of nice to kind of bask in the con scene, kind of meet up with a couple people. And if anything, it was a prelude for Saturday.
Definitely. Game time.
Yeah, indeed, game time. I don't know where you want to start, Pete. Should we start with, well, I guess we'll just do it chronologically here. Saturday, we got there. Was it right before 10, right around 10? I don't remember.
Yeah, just as doors were opening. And the thing that was a big change this year, apparently they had problems with people getting into the convention with fake badges. So they put RFIDs in all the badges that you tapped in and tapped out with to attempt to stem that. Having media credentials for the fourth or fifth year in a row, scouted that out. I have to say they did the best job yet with the press area. And as far as, just a place to charge your laptop, charge your phone, et cetera, there was an entire interview area and, it looked out onto, the floor from above. So, that was very much appreciated. But we got there at 10 and, decided to check out the floor proper. Wanted to first, since we're doing the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast, get a feel for what was going on around the Marvel area. And we can come back to that in a little bit. But, cruised around. I had seen at least pictures of an autographed copy by Ian Dosher, who has written the New York Times best-selling William Shakespeare's Star Wars, Verily a New Hope, which is Star Wars in iambic pentameter. They just announced early last week the deal for the Empire Striketh Back. And I can't remember what the deal is on the Jedi one. And they're going to be coming out March and third quarter of next year, respectively, and was kind of jazzed up to possibly meet him. But the Quirk Publishing just had sent some autograph copies ahead. otherwise, cruise the dealer area, always try to check out the Nintendo area to see that up close, because I think they do a really good job at these types of conventions in terms of their presence and in terms of what they bring and what they offer, and you get a feel for what's coming both in the holiday season and in the first quarter of the new year.
We also hit, there's the obligatorily each year, there's the Chevy area where you can get a free New York Comic Con t-shirt. This year they actually improved over the system where they kind of had touch screen computers, I want to say 8, around the kiosk where you could get in line and input your information. That way, because you got to give them your address and your phone number. And, I'm interested in a Chevy Volt and a this and a that, pound the flesh to get a free t-shirt. Right. But definitely an improvement over last year where it's like, fill out the card and you're writing quickly and you don't want to exactly give them your address, but you want to have, if they're not quite sure what the number is, blah, blah, blah. So, fair is fair. And actually went quite smoothly having those eight different computers open. And, I know I put in my info and my wife's info on Friday to get two shirts. And then when you were there, I was, there was no line. So I'm like, well, shoot, Pete, I'll put in your wife's info if you want to put in your info, and you can go home with a t-shirt for you guys too. So,
right. There's only so much too that the floor tends to change year to year. And we've been to so many of these types of conventions. You've seen the same vendors very much. You see steampunk outfitters and, stuff like this,
interesting hats.
Yeah. And don't take a picture of our stuff lady and stuff like that. Matt's been shouted down you know, 2 years in a row by this woman who has like crazy wares that apparently she doesn't understand, you know, public domain. And yeah, but anyway, so we milled around for a little bit. Did we do the entire floor? Definitely not. But just enough to wet our whistles, sticking close to the Marvel area because we were prepared for Agent Fitz and Agent Simmons, Ian DeCacaster, and the lovely Elizabeth Henstridge, along with Marvel head of television Jeff Loeb, to be signing autographs. And we wanted to be in on that, only to find out when we doubled back in what was never put online in neither the app nor on Marvel's website, that it was a ticketed event. Not that you needed to purchase tickets, but when they opened up in the morning, they handed out numbers a la a deli, and we were left to watch the sandwiches made and not get to have any.
And Pete, I'm still kicking myself a bit because we could have made a beeline at 10:02.
Right. And tell your bit about, you know, getting there and talking to the guy and everything there.
Yeah, we talked to the one guy and it was like, so how does this work for getting the, you know, getting the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. autographs? He goes, oh, you line up 15 minutes before, line up right here. We're not letting anybody line up before that.
Which I thought was proactive, like, all right, man. And we stressed that before Comic-Con, like, you do not wait overnight, unlike San Diego. And we get it, you know, the grandfather, everything over there. But that people go, as you stressed, and get hotel rooms and then, you know, look at their hotel rooms overnight so that they can see a 4-minute trailer for The Walking Dead that everybody gets to see, you know, 3 days later, really kind of defeats the purpose of the entire experience.
So when we finally found out about the ticketed thing, we asked a different worker, and I could actually feel my blood boiling a bit. He was a little short with us, even though I guarantee you, not you, Pete, I know you were there, but I guarantee the listeners that I was definitely like, so do I understand this? Can you just explain to me the particulars? Have we missed the opportunity? And he was just like, yeah, they're gone. They're gone. And it's just like, okay, way to let me down there. I mean, certainly now I know for next year. But I don't want to focus on that negative. That definitely was the one sour note to both days for me. Just because, you know, you and I both are pretty planning oriented and kind of, what's the goal? What's, you know, what are the priorities? What are, you know, what's the point where you say, ah, this isn't going to happen, and you give up? You know, that kind of, we're kind of very oriented like that. But definitely a little annoyed. The flip side was, we were able to stand in front of the signing stage as they came out and they were introduced and waved to everybody. And after about 5 minutes, Pete, we were actually like, maybe if not in the front of the viewing area, if you will, it's not the, we were not in line for autographs by any stretch of the imagination, but you know, we got within 15 feet of these people, and I'll take that, you know?
I mean, listen, we were within spitting distance. Not that I would spit on either of those actors. They're doing a fantastic job. but we were right there. And you know what warmed my heart is that the line seemed to be primarily children, many of whom, like, in the cosplay, you know, the first kid up was dressed as Wolverine. So you know what? That's fine. Would I like to have told them, you know, hey, loving the job you're doing, you know, absolutely. But, you know, we're going to get that opportunity at another date, Matt.
Yeah. Yeah. Now we know, just to be proactive on that one thing. It was great seeing them as up close as we did. I mean, 15 feet is pretty good. You know, they're both, you know, she's gorgeous. He's a handsome guy. Jeff Loeb, you know, whatever. He's older. not on my radar. But
you got a serious grudge against Loeb after the loss thing, but you know, we'll get to that too.
I definitely have a grudge against Jeff Loeb, believe you me. But you know, so that was what it was. And I was definitely steaming as we walked away after that, a little bit, just, you know, having felt like we missed out a little bit. And but then it was All the more fire in my belly, Pete. We have to see the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. panel, which was scheduled for, was it 5?
Yes.
It was scheduled for 5, and The Walking Dead was scheduled for like 6:30?
6:15, I believe.
6:15. So like those, Walking Dead was the biggie to be in.
Right.
And obviously, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was, you know, as the opening act, essentially, to Walking Dead, it was going to be packed in there, too. So,
right. And again, you know, just to echo, you know, what we said in the pre Comic-Con episode, you know, this has very much become the Walking Dead's convention. They're on all the badges. The last couple of years, they had actually shown the premiere. This was the first time they had not shown the premiere to the season. You know, but they had just about everybody there. And you know, again, we'll get into that proper in just a little bit. But, you know, so we had a little time to kill. It was 12 o'clock that, you know, Fitzsimmons was signing. So, you know, we didn't get into that. We stayed like a half hour and then, all right, let's go check out the Marvel video game panel in the one hall. Go to get into that and, you know, get frozen out. The one thing that was definitely on my radar that I would have liked to have checked out that was going off at 2:45 was the Star Wars Rebels panel, which, you know, I had to make a tactical decision. Matt, you doubled back and you went to get online for the main stage, the main ballroom, whatever we want to call it, where there were going to be several panels and screenings leading up to the S.H.I.E.L.D. and then Walking Dead presentations.
Yeah, at about 12:45, we were online for what, as you said, at the moment was the Marvel video games, kind of online with an eye towards getting in there for the Star Wars Rebels presentation. I just kept saying to myself, you know, we didn't kind of plan ahead to get the autograph, and that's nobody's fault. It was just, we simply didn't know. But we know the main stage is going to be packed. And I was like, I just kept going back and forth, you know, because it wasn't like, you know, oh, hey, I'm looking forward to like splitting up from Pete for a couple hours. But I was like, you know what? I'm going to kick myself if we get frozen out of the two Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. things. So I was like, you know what, Pete? I'm going to go hop on that line there. Because I had talked to the guy the day, you know, one of the workers the day before, and he's like, you can save seats. So I'm like, worst comes to worst, even if you only get into the room 2 hours later, I'll have the seat for you. So, you know, so I did that. And then it was at 1 o'clock when I like went around, you know, there's the whole, you know, not turnstile, but the whole up and down and up and down. And finally, like I was at the end of the unmoving line. The hall was full. People were in there for Superman at 75, and there were probably 1,000 people online. And I kind of looked at it. I said, okay, I think I have good odds of getting in there at some point between 1 o'clock and 5 o'clock. And I was like, oh, okay, I guess I'll be waiting by myself for a while. And then I think about a half hour later, met up and you were able to kind of, you know, hop in front of the several hundred people who were then behind me. And, then, Pete, we played a little game called The Waiting Game.
Well, prior to that, though, you know, I think it bears mentioning, and, you know, one of the hallmarks of this podcast is we're going to call it not as we see it, but the way it is, which is to say, if you're worthy of praise, we're going to heap it on. If you're not, you know, we're going to heap that on, too. And last year in particular, you had horrible cell reception. Mm-hmm. And I had gotten it done. And this year I had no cell reception and you never had so much as a blip. So I'm on that other line trying to gauge whether I should come by you, whether I should stick it out. And I made, again, the tactical decision. You know what? We're talking in Star Wars Rebels about a show that is a year out. And a cartoon at that, as opposed to, you know, a panel for a show that we podcast and the biggest new drama on TV this year, and then the biggest show on TV proper. So I said, you know what, I just better make sure that I'm over there since I've at least heard from Matt that he's going to be there, and, you know, didn't want to step on toes too as far as, you know, you hold me a space or anything. And, you know, the one thing that's not really done with the press credentials that, you know, I think kind of defeats the purpose is there's no special access given to the panels or the screenings. It's not as if there's a separate door that I go in or separate seats or anything like that, which I think is interesting in the way that that's done. You know, you go to a ball game and I'm in a different area than the general fan is. But in terms of a reportorial process, I think it kind of muddies the work a little bit.
You know what, Pete, and I'm not trying to defend New York Comic Con. I think that they are such a new convention. I think this is just the ninth year. And I was surprised 6 months ago looking at the attendance figures. You know, they've been at over 100,000 for the last, you know, couple of years. But like you go back 5 years ago, you're talking 60,000 people in 3 or 4 days. So, you know, you go back 2 years before that and you're talking like, you know, 35 or 40,000 people. So the growth has been so fantastic. I think they're not quite, I mean, I think that their main focus is putting on a great convention and whatever those particulars are in terms of, you know, layout of the floor and what talent can you get for whatnot. I think it's just a case where it's like, they're not quite sure how to handle the press thing because, you know, they might've crossed 120,000 this year, you know, 3 years ago, four years ago, that might have been, you know, 30,000 less people. So I think it's just a matter of, I'm not trying to suggest they are in any way not a well-oiled machine, but I think that they're looking to keep the engine well-oiled. And the fact that, you know, the fact that there's a seating issue for press or this or that or the other, I think they're still just kind of like wrapping their heads around what it is that they have to do.
I mean, they do a good job. It's a small qualm at that point. But anyway, so we met up and yeah, Matt, as you were saying, the waiting started. And, you know, why don't you talk a little bit about how we spent that time?
We caught maybe the last 20 minutes. You were there for maybe the last 10 or something like that of the panel. I'm calling it Superman at 75, although I think it was mostly like kind of Superman animated type stuff. Bruce Timm was there, the vaunted Marvel DC animator. I didn't see much of the panel from where we were at. Certainly they showed this 2 minute, you know, Superman at 75 video that's been making the rounds on Twitter and Entertainment Weekly and all that. And as somebody who grew up a Superman fan and somebody who kind of in my core is still a Superman fan, even though I haven't read the comics in a long time and, you know, certainly did not like the Man of Steel movie. That was great to see. And it was great to see on a big projected screen with giant speakers. Cause when I watched it, you know, here at home, it was, you know, a little bit of a better view cause it wasn't projected and I wasn't at an angle, but like to hear like the hits that would just rumble the room and, you know, when the music hits, fills the room and echoes and whatnot. That was certainly worth seeing. Then that panel wrapped up and some people left and some people moved up and you could see kind of, there was a particular subset of under 25 girls and one rather tall, lanky, very excited young man who was not far from us who all of a sudden were, oh, because it was time for the Teen Wolf panel. A show that, Pete, between you and I, how many minutes of Teen Wolf have we watched?
I've seen all 90 minutes of the actual Teen Wolf movie that's lifeless corpse was raped by MTV to to produce this dreck. I've since done research. They have combined or distorted the Michael J. Fox character of Scott. And the dad is apparently named Styles. So they didn't even give, you know, Scott his proper friend. All I want to know is where the hell Boof was, if they ever found Styles' stash, you know, what happened after the guy took his wiener out at the basketball game. That's a real thing, people. If you go and you watch on YouTube during the crowd celebration sequence at the end of the movie, a guy takes it out and it's caught on film.
Indeed, and that's a pretty frightening thing to see. Although, probably less frightening, I suspect, than watching the TV show.
Yeah, it just, I remember, they just got a fourth season, and I don't know whether they're on twice a year to accelerate that, because it definitely hasn't been 3 years. But I remember when MTV brought Beavis and Butthead back, sadly only for one season. So that shows you, you know, what apparently passes for ratings on a show that, or a show, a network that hasn't run a music video since 1998. But, you know, I remember, oh, hey, it's Teen Wolf, and I'm not watching that.
The people on the Teen Wolf panel were what I'm going to assume is Teen Wolf, as you said,
yes.
Dad. And then producer guy. And I know at a certain point, the Teen Wolf actor, who, I mean, look, you know what? This show is not in our demographic. This is not aimed at us. I'm sure he's a nice guy. He certainly came across as nice and kind of like, you know, he'd hear a fan yell something out and he'd be like, I love you too. You know, so he was,
right.
He was doing, you know, what he had to do.
It was what it was. And, you know, again, no disrespect to their art. And, you know, it's just, man, that was a tough watch on that, you know, Jumbotron, you know, projector there for a captive audience.
Particularly as he's like, I'm actually just a shy guy. You know, it's tough for me to be in front of all of you. I love you too. I'd like to get into writing and directing and producing. I remember turning to you, and maybe this is me. I remember turning to you and being like, this is a kid who has never been told no in his life. Not that he was a jerk in any way. I want to make that clear. But this is just one of those people you're like, it's just been lucky the entire time. This is like Daniel Radcliffe, like, oh, I'm not doing too well in school. Let me try out for David Copperfield. Oh, that went well. I just did David Copperfield in the BBC. Somebody just saw me in David Copperfield. Christopher Columbus, you're doing a movie about a British boy? Okay, I'll do that. You know, it's like that kind of story, and it irked me, and maybe I'm just a mean jerk.
Well, he didn't know who Iago was.
Yes.
Which, you know, again, respect, man, but yeah, there's this author named Shakespeare. And he wrote stuff that pretty much, like, we're constantly still referencing.
It was like the twilight of his day.
And, yeah, that was just a rough watch there.
But Teen Wolf, as all things must, Teen Wolf ended. And then with that, all the shall we say, steamy fans walked out. And we had enough room. And we got what ended up being pretty good seats, Pete. It was not, you know, front row. It wasn't even front 20 or 30 rows, but we had a good vantage point or in relation to one of the big projected screens. And there we sat, and we were kind of pretty happy with where we were seated. And we kind of initially had, you know, all right, Pete, well, when people leave, I'll get up and I'll go there. And I think we just kind of quickly realized, like, you know what? Everybody's in here for Walking Dead. Everybody's happy to see Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Nobody's leaving.
Right.
So then, Pete, we sat through back-to-back one-hour presentations from the network that is made for us, not the WB. First was the show Reign, R-E-I-G-N.
You mean the CW, man. It was the WB.
Oh,
back in the dang. In the dizzle. It's
you
the
are
CW
right. It is,
now.
It that, is the that, CW.
That shows, you know, how out of date it is.
Reign is the story of young 18-year-old future Mary Queen of Scots, who's going to be a douche as an old lady, but now she's like hot, and she's betrothed to the Prince of France named Francis, who I couldn't fucking figure out for the first 15 minutes of the pilot, because they aired the pilot. They showed us the pilot. I was like, is his name, are they calling him France? Because, like, Shakespeare does that, you know, it'll be like, you right. shall go talk, you know, talk to Scotland or whatever.
Speak to Denmark.
Yeah. And so she's in love with Francis, but he has a bastard older brother. And I mean that, you know, in the I cheat
in
on
the
my wife
sense. Yeah.
who very quickly you could tell, you know, halfway through the episode, they're setting up like bastard loves Mary. Mary loves Francis. Francis has a French husky-voiced bosomy girl who he already has sex with. So it's your standard love triangle. You know, she has her ladies in waiting and whatnot. Pete, I know that the pilot...
You mean Gossip Girl?
Oh, yes.
The other Gossip Girls? I mean, the show is not premiered yet. I can only assume it's a mid-season replacement.
No, it's this month.
Oh, all right. Because I refuse to do research on it. I'm sure it was pitched as historical Gossip Girl. I'm sure that's what pitch was.
The Tudors meets Gossip Girl.
What's that?
The Tudors meets Gossip Girl. That was it. And they said, boom, and we'll do it for under this price because we're going to film in Ireland and get tax credits.
It was completely anachronistic in that it's got the, you know, the pop music over the wedding scene and everything like that. I mean, we both gave it props. You, I think, a little bit more than me for making the attempt of reaching into history and everything. But when the showrunner and creator says, you know, we're going to take from history but make it sexier, I was like, wow, no thank you.
Pete, the premiere, I don't know whether it airs at 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock. Right now, it is 8:56 p.m. on Thursday, October 17th. So either it is wrapping up right now or it is about to air. So certainly by the time everybody hears this, at least on the East Coast, you'll have to catch it somewhere else. But
well, all I know is I didn't get asked anything about it. And as far as anyone I know is concerned, it doesn't exist. So there is zero buzz heading into it. And hey, good luck with the 13 episodes you shot that will get burned off over Christmas vacation.
Well, now, Pete, fair is fair. I just want to share with you a headline and the first two paragraphs from the USA Today article, the USA Today review of it. Headline, wrong as, quote, rain. CW ignores history, insults viewers. Now the first two paragraphs. It may be too much to hope that CW would help educate our children, but we could at least ask the network to avoid making them stupid. That risk of generational dumbing down assumes, of course, that any of those children actually slog their way through this ludicrously written, dully cast, anachronistic blunder, which churns Mary Queen of Scots through the CW Gossip Girl blender.
Ah, boo, booyah.
So, it wasn't awful.
It wasn't. There were redeeming qualities of it, but again, the One Direction haircut on Francis, the lilting English accents on, you know, just about everybody in France.
Oh, you know, that drove me bonkers. Yeah. She's Mary Queen of Scots, but she doesn't have a Scottish accent. Fine, she was raised in a nunnery or whatever. But then she's like, hello, I'm Mary. And then she goes to France and everyone's like, hello, Mary, I'm Susie. And it's like, what the fuck? I'm not saying they need to be like historically perfect accents or whatever. Can you just do a little bit of an accent? So I'm like French, French, English, English, French. Oh my goodness.
It was bad. You know, they're going for a mystical, a magical thing. You know, I'm sure Game of Thrones is an influence as well. You know, Nostradamus is a character. But man, it misfired much more often than it hit.
Pete, I'll tell you where it worked. There was at one point when she's like in her chamber, there's somebody behind kind of the dressing screen that's like,
that was compelling.
Don't drink the wine. And then she can't find her, but she sees that there, you know, Mary sees that there's a like a hidden panel, you know, so like secret whatever. And, you know, she's like, ooh, what is that? And then at the end of the episode, she's kind of out there looking at the Scottish moors, but she's in France, but she's kind of like out there and it's like dark and there's thunder and she like hears somebody behind her and she's like, thank you for telling me about the wine or something like that. Or, you know, who is that or something like that. And there's a shot of her facing the camera, black in the background, and the thunder lights up the background and you just see something behind her that doesn't look, it's not, you know, a resplendent looking person. It's kind of fuzzy. And that got a good, that gave me a good jump. I think that got a good jump out of the audience. So fair is fair. They ended on like a, ooh, what is this? Is it a ghost? Is it whatever? You know, did it die in Tahiti and come back? You know, that was good.
Listen, I'm pretty sure the same guy that you referenced being in front of us online in the queue for Teen Wolf got up once the lights came back up and basically asked 2,000-3,000 people in there, did anybody enjoy that? And the corresponding answer did not lead you to believe anybody did. Mary Queen of Scots looked like she was about to lose her lunch or was having tummy problems in much of the increasingly awkward panel guided by a woman from Entertainment Weekly.
Who also was like, so the fashion is so great. And yes. I just think that the connection between you and Marriage Boy is fantastic. I'm like, oh my goodness, does everything need to end with like the slide up, you idiot woman?
Yeah, it was. I mean, listen, we paid the price to be in some great panels. We're going to talk real quick about the next one because that's all I'm going to have PTSD.
Right, because it really was even worse.
I had to sit through a 43-minute episode, I counted, of apparently the second season. This thing came back, okay, of a reboot of Beauty and the Beast, which was last done wonderfully as a Disney movie, and before that in the 80s on CBS on a show that actually George R. R. Martin of Game of Thrones fame once wrote. Okay, this thing is a train wreck.
Apparently,
Vincent the Beast is a super soldier. Get me the hell out of there.
And he only looks like a beast when he gets angry.
The only thing I can say it has it going for it, and apparently it's a selling point, which, all right, I give him credit. They have an extraordinarily multicultural cast. Next.
But, well, I just want to say one thing about the multicultural cast for Beauty and the Beast. Fine, I understand Kristen Kruk is half Asian and no criticism there. She's a half Asian actress who is the main actor on a TV show.
Matt, the politically correct term is vaguely Asian.
But from there, yes, okay, fine. They do have an Indian actor and either then a woman of color who's kind of like, they're both police or something. But they're like
the politically correct term, Matt, is cops.
Cops. They're I was like, oh no, Pete's gonna say something. Anyhow, they're like in the helper roles because there's like Beauty and the Beast, and then there's like their fat, bespectacled computer friend who's white, and then it's like the helper cops who deliver important exposition and information and save you when you're in trouble. So like, you know, yes, there's a woman of color and an Indian gentleman who are both working on the show. Kudos to that, because you could have just cast white Canadians. But also was like, hey, the Indian guy isn't playing the Beast. He's playing like Lieutenant, you know, Marapo, who's going to now give some important, you know, we're canvassing the city for Vincent. We can't find him. Over and out. So I don't know. Thus ends my rant.
Yeah. Let's relive happier times here, okay? So having paid the piper, as we did, in the form of the CW Croc Fest, finally it was time to play, and the lights dimmed ever so much, and we got Jeff Loeb, Ian DeCakester, and Elizabeth Hensridge again. Great to see them. Great to hear them talk. Everybody there, they got a really warm reception. We got about, you know, maybe 5, 6, 7 minutes into the presentation. And boom, how would you like to watch the fourth episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which the two actors here filmed but haven't even seen yet? Sure, we're game. Again, this is what the Comic-Con experience is about.
And yeah, it was great to see the episode. I walked around with my head high the rest of Saturday and Sunday and Monday and Tuesday until 8 p.m. being like, I've seen this episode. I'm, you know, blah, blah, blah.
I know something you don't know.
And I have to say this. It was a very, very good episode. It was better watching it with 3,000 people who got the show. Because there literally was just, you know, like, oh man, you know, cut to commercial and then come back and, you know, applause. Right. And it was a really nice community experience.
It was worth it. It made everything that we endured before it that much better. And then, Matt, you got your moment to shine because you had actually jumped up to get on the little queue there in front of one of three microphones that was scattered around the panel area and got shot down. They didn't take any questions prior to the episode being played. And as soon as it ended, got yourself up there. And you had a chance to ask a question before everybody in the stage area.
Indeed, I did. And if you listen to our Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast on the Pop Culture Podcast feed, you've heard the clip, so I won't replay it here. And if you want to hear the clip, you can go to that podcast and listen to it. But I first started out because I said, I want to have a little bit of an in. I want to be memorable. And I want to just not go with my jokey question off the bat. So I said, I'm a dad, and I really appreciate, especially as the dad of a daughter, I appreciate that this show has such smart women in it. And with that, 3,000 people applauded me. Perhaps also the show, I don't know, but applauded me. And it was this wonderful moment. And then I let the applause die down. And I said, you know, but my question is for you, Ian. And I kind of saw him turn his head like, oh, somebody's talking to me. And then, of course, I told him how in episode 103, there was reference to him wanting his character wanting a super spy monkey. And I said, thus my question is, will we ever see Fitz's monkey? And there definitely was some laughter initially where people weren't sure if I was like being inappropriate or not, which I think was part of the nature of what I said. I kind of wanted it to be like, wait, what? I wanted it to be memorable. So then he then went
on. It was definitely memorable. You got the biggest response of any question. And, you know, arguably, you know, other than, you know, hey, we're going to show you an episode you haven't seen yet. You know, people were with it and people responded.
Well, that certainly puts a smile on my face. And he kind of went along with it. He's like, yeah, I think he should definitely, you know, let's listen to the voice of the people. This is what they want. Let's make it happen, you know. So that was
again,
that was great fun.
Hashtag FitzMonkey, FITZ, monkey. Get out there. Tweet that. We're going to make this happen.
Absolutely. We want, yeah. A year from now, I want to say, so do you realize, sir, I'm the one that asked you the question about FitzMonkey, and now it's the best-selling Marvel plush toy ever.
Yeah.
So it was
graphic
great.
Novel next summer.
Absolutely. It was great seeing them. They were, you know, they weren't on stage probably for more than 15 minutes, but definitely two British actors at the beginning of an American career, both young. I mean, I think she's about 24, 25. I don't think he's much older. So kind of both at the beginning of their careers in a big Hollywood show in New York to kind of be the face of the show. And all in all, Pete, just a wonderful panel, a lot of fun.
Huge opportunity for them, and but a fitting appetizer and a choice spot for them before the main course.
Which, of course, I mean, you could just immediately, you know, it's like, oh, and goodbye, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Hey, Walking Dead starts in 5 minutes. And it was just...
nobody moved.
Right. No, nobody left. There were people who were told you can go to the bathroom, but you have 5 minutes. And when we see empty seats in 5 minutes, we're bringing people in and they might steal your seat.
And so they soiled themselves where they were.
But...
Nothing.
Nothing in terms of soiling.
I got nothing with that.
I just had the mental image. Listen,
they were transfixed to their seats. Nobody dare get up for fear of missing out on this. And it was certainly something that had you not been there, you would have missed out on.
Look, I think we got into the room at 2:30. We had perfectly acceptable seats, and got to see the premiere. The premiere panel of the weekend in Walking Dead, which obviously we're going to discuss in a moment. The fact that there were some people who had been in there the entire day, just leaving for bathroom breaks. And they have kind of main stage only bathrooms that you had access to.
Yeah.
So the fact that that was the case, I just found astonishing. So I think there probably were people, Pete, who left there with poopy pants. And I think that's a very real threat. But for the panel proper, whoever was the person to introduce the host, introduces Yvette Brown from Community, who plays Shirley on Community, who's been on Talking Dead.
A self-proclaimed Walking Dead super fan.
Indeed. And I have to say, she was the best host that of any of the panels I saw in the 2 days. But enough about her. With that, she then calls out Robert Kirkman, the creator of the graphic novel, and a couple of the producers, Gail
Scott Ann Hurd. Gimble, the new showrunner for season four.
For season four, if he makes it to the end.
The Walking Dead actually refers to the showrunners on this show.
Then the energy started to really increase. They call out Andrew Lincoln, who of course plays Rick. They call out, I mean, Pete, I know who was last. I want to hold that to last for our listeners. Right. But they call out, I mean, who? There was Tyrone. There was Michonne.
Tyrese,
pardon
me.
Let's
leave it at who we didn't get. The only people who were not there was the gentleman who plays Herschel, the governor, Crazy Carl, because I think he's in, like, How to Kill a Little Boy School. And Carol apparently had the flu. And the head effects zombie guy, who's also a director, dialed her up at one point, and we all yelled, "Get well, Carol," into the phone, which was a nice touch.
It was very nice. It was also completely organic. Like, all of a sudden you see him on his phone. He's like, "Whoa, whoa, excuse me. On three, say, get well, Carol." You know, it was really, really nice.
But who did it all lead up to, Matt?
Pete, it all led up to Norman Reedus coming out. And every woman in the room being prepared to do whatever he asked of them, including if that meant, you know, carry a child. And the room, people were already, you know, already just jubilant at seeing these people. But then it just, the roof blew off when he came out. And I had this sense, if they have all these people here, there's no way they're going to show us a whole episode. When they can just talk to these people and show a couple clips. So, Pete, I don't recall, is that when they showed the clip from the season premiere?
No, they showed us, I'm sorry, yes, they showed us the season premiere clip, which, if you've seen it to this point, is the discussion they have with Daryl and Michonne and soon-to-be dead boyfriend of Beth Greene. You know, hey, Daryl, what did you do before the turn, as it's called in the episode, when they're outside the supermarket, which was cute. It was a nice little, taste for that show, and then ended with the very potent tease towards the end of half of a man on the ground, the other half of him still alive on the roof, along with a crashed military helicopter and probably like three dozen zombies on the roof of the supermarket.
Yeah, I actually thought that for some reason I thought that was going to be the opening scene. And the fact that it wasn't just made watching the season premiere all the better. Because I'm like, oh, there's going to be something. There's going to be something with the helicopter. Just you wait. But that was fantastic. Then they went to questions. The first question quickly got volatile and seemed like a fight might break out. But it actually was all planned as an actor who is, I guess, joining the show for season four. Took his mask off, and he was quickly introduced and waved to everybody. I recognized him from a couple other things he's played, like the cop and the soldier in something that everybody who is listening has seen.
Yeah.
Like, I guarantee you he was in The Shield. There was an FX show that took place. It was like an army show that took place in Iraq, and he was in that as, you know, a drill sergeant or something.
Right. Then he's been around. Then we got into our actual fan questions, although there's some question if they were fan questions.
Pete, the only question is in your heart which is stone cold, because then this girl goes, they go, oh, Yvette Nicole Brown says, oh, over here. You know, she goes to the, she's on the left side. She goes to the right microphone. She goes, oh, you, you know, young lady, go ahead. And you hear this little girl go, hi. And then you can hear her voice break and she says,
clearly starstruck. Yes.
She goes, I made bracelets for the cast. Can I give it to them? And there's this pause and Yvette Nicole Brown's like, sure. And with that, the girl starts to come up and people are applauding and the cast gets up and meets her at the one side of the stairs and people are applauding even more as they're there and they're talking to her. And then, the actress who plays Maggie is like, come on, come on. And with that, the girl starts walking towards the table and people are just, you know, people are just, I don't know, overflowing in their joy. And then Norman Reedus, you know, basically says, you know, come here, you can sit on my lap. And that's when we realize she's going to stay for the panel. And people, there were tears, Pete. I know you want to, you know, not just drink your Haterade, but spray it everywhere. I'm telling you, it was authentic. It was beautiful. Norman Reedus is a god.
Yeah. Oh, no. And again, you know, this is a guy who knows he's won the lottery and he embraces it. And I just hope it never reaches, you know, a point when in season, you know, 11 of The Walking Dead, when Daryl is the only human left and is fighting, you know, hordes of zombies off himself each week. That's the show. And looking for, you know, one woman alive to repopulate the human species. You know, I just hope he never tires of the character in the way that so many of them, I don't want to be known as Tony Soprano for the rest of my very brief life. You know, that just embrace the beloved character, play it until the last out, until the last call. And I really get the sense that that's who he is. And, you know, he talked effusively in the panel that, you know, he would have, when he heard the show was casting, he was like, get me on there. Just let me do some day work, man. Let me be a zombie. Let me work in the background, whatever. And, you know, he is the fan favorite of that show. I do think, at least as far as the TV version is concerned, he is so popular, they will never kill him off. You know, and I have to imagine that, you know, if Andrew Lincoln tires or if they decide, you know, we're going to mix it up and make it different than the graphic novel and kill Rick off, that it becomes Daryl's show and he can literally, you know, wander the wilderness and we can see what other kind of scrapes he can get in and out of. But the little girl sat on his lap, but just, you know, I was struck by how matter-of-factly she sat on his lap, and she's looking out at us. And and again, you know, it's not haterade, Matt. I'm not trying to be defensive, but it just seemed like an inauthentic reaction. I wondered aloud if she was a plant, if this was something. I mean, listen, they don't need that type of buzz. They have enough buzz as it is. And their ratings were monstrous.
Yeah.
On Saturday night, Sunday night, they established the largest audience ever in the history of cable.
Really?
They don't need the ratings. They don't need the buzz. But I was just trying to, maybe I'm projecting that I would have been staring at him, you know, sitting on his lap instead of looking out at us. And I get it. She's an 8-9-year-old girl. You know, she's seeing all these people and she's looking out, but she was almost too calm when she was up there. It rang a little funny. Not to mention that the questions then tended to become greatly, can you top this? Hey, Andrew Lincoln, can I show you my tattoo of you on me? Sure. Okay. Second to last question. Hey, I'm here without my fiance who's terminally ill. Norman, can I give you her phone number and you can call her after the show? Not even a hesitation. Before he was done asking the question, Reedus was like, yes. And the guy's making a beeline up there to get the digits. Okay. It's fish in a barrel, though. I mean, great cast. really, really nice and genuine, but I just feel there's a point at which we're kind of, you know, taking advantage when we do that.
You know,
and
what, Pete?
I'm not sure that's entirely appropriate. Their goodwill is their goodwill. And, you know, again, it's not a show with stars in the traditional sense. Okay. They didn't go out and get widely known commodities. You know, the guy who played Dale was pretty much like one of the bigger names when season one came around, and Andrea, who had been in, you know, a Stephen King movie or two and some other stuff, you know, they certainly came across as very personable and lovely people, and you root for them in light of the hellish nature of the show. But I just felt a little dirty in the way that people kind of, you know, how can I angle in on this, having them there?
I agree that there's a line that certainly some people crossed. The fact, I mean, you and I are both Star Trek guys, and I think, you know, the fact that we're aware of similar stuff like this in the Star Trek world. You know, I think the last question was, Mr. Reedus, can I have your water bottle? And he said, yes. I mean, that is straight out of the Trekkies movie, where I think somebody asks, is it John Delancey?
The Q-virus.
Yeah. So, like, the fact that they're, like, I think that, as you said, these are all actors who know, A, they could be probably killed off anytime soon. I assume at this point, if not to begin the show, they probably have Lost-style contracts where it's like, you get your money up front, we can fire you anytime, we can kill you off at any time.
Well, it came up on the panel, and I'm convinced there's somebody that was on that panel whose death has already been filmed or they're aware of.
Yeah, I mean, that certainly could be. I mean, bottom line, they certainly, I think everybody who's there realizes, when are you going to get, you know, last year it was 10 million, 11 million viewers. This past, you know, Sunday night it was 15 or 16 million viewers. When is this going to happen again? None of you are going to see 16 million viewers again. So if you have some weird person who's going to do this and do that, roll with the punches. The fact that Reedus is like, sure, give me her phone number. And the fact that he's clearly already resigned himself to the fact, maybe I'm getting played, maybe I'm making a big difference in somebody's life. Either way, it's 2 minutes that I'm happy to give you. That is incredibly powerful. That's incredibly wonderful. And it's, you know, frankly, it's positive in a way that he's pushing back what could be cynicism and legitimate cynicism. I'm sure that he's been burned before with some crazy thing.
Absolutely.
Of course, each time he, you know, goes to a Comic-Con and is like, hey, college girl who's legal, I'm sure he's also like, and before the convention is over, I'm going to call somebody's dying fiance to make them feel better about the world that they live in, because I just got sorority sisters, you know, and not two either, like four, so ka-ching.
Yeah, he just, and they all come across as just genuinely nice people, and you know, it was a joy to be around for that. They did show us, while they did not give us the premiere, they did show us a harrowing scene from some point later in the season. We're given no indication as to when. Matt, I'm thinking spoiler Pete here is going to hold back for once. He's going to show restraint.
I certainly support you. I was actually describing the scene to somebody on Monday or Tuesday, and they seemed like they had seen it online or something. Like, you know, officially, like on the AMC website or whatever. This also is somebody who just might not have understood the words I was saying, so that's possible too. But either way, heck of a scene. All I want to say is, I'll say two things. First thing is Dodge Charger. Second thing is, in capital letters, Swarm. And I can't wait for that. It's great having seen that scene. Is that next week? Is that in 6 weeks? Is that the season finale? I have no idea.
Yeah, no, it's the anticipation of it. And, you know, listen, it was a show that began with, again, a lot of buzz and being promoted so heavily at Comic-Con, you know, 3 years ago, shortly before its premiere. And, you know, now it's the most watched show on TV. It's become appointment viewing. you know, has gotten better and better and better. And certainly the, you know, premiere episode of season four lived up to, you know, the great heights they found in season three. So you wish him nothing but success. I wish Scott Gimble a lot of luck, you know, two showrunners into this. I was a little disappointed that he didn't get to talk more during The Talking Dead, because Chris Hardwick of Nerdist asks questions and then is uninterested in answers. And Gimple was visibly befuddled and slightly agitated by that approach, which led me to tweet at Hardwick and even get a response that I was just trying to be mean, that that's not what he meant. But I think the fact that I got a response proved my point that, you know, he's not so much a host as an albatross to that little after talk show.
Wow. Thus ends Pete's rant.
Yes.
Well, Pete, all in all, it was just a fantastic Comic-Con. I'm glad I did the 2 days, even in your absence on Friday. I don't know. I mean, looking back now, here we are, you know, it's Thursday night. Tomorrow I'm going to get up and go to work, whereas last Friday I went up and, you know, went to the city. In the afterglow, part of me is like, oh, it would have been great to go Sunday. But frankly, Sunday, in addition to doing some, you know, some house stuff, I was just shot after 2 days of train rides and car rides and make sure the schedule is right and so on and so forth. Those 2 days were enough. I don't know. Maybe next year I'll have the itch for 3 days, but I guess it depends who the, you know, who's there, what the different panels are. But certainly, Pete, fun had by all.
I mean, listen, it is a grind. I've done 2 days consecutively for you know, an extended period of time. And, you know, it's a lot to take in, and people do come from all over the world for this. And same as they do in San Diego, it's a tremendous undertaking. You know, much respect for people who get through that, much appreciation for the people who put it on. It was a great time. It's a definite highlight every year to have this, you know, very close by.
And Pete, I'd like to say that, or I wish to say rather, that we're, you know, now less than a year away until the next one, but I think it's actually like a week later next year. So okay, we're not even a year away from the next one, as I recall.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it continues to be a platform for just so much, and more they're realizing, you know, the only thing that Marvel, you know, the misstep before with the tickets, okay, understandable, was very surprised that Thor did not have any type of presence, given that the movie comes out in a couple of weeks. Agent M, Marvel's, you know, social media officer, his first name is Ryan. His last name, I can't quite pronounce it. It begins with a P. It's like Penagos.
Yeah, I think it's Penagro, something like that.
Yeah, tweeted today that he has now seen the Thor movie. Stunned that, you know, at least have some big stills or some canned footage or an interview or something, you know, I guess maybe worried about, you know, taking the focus off of a fledgling effort into TV. I don't know, but just kind of surprised by that.
Certainly, you know, if they said, you know, Chris Hemsworth to discuss Thor, that would
who's been at other conventions we've been to. He was at the Philly Comic Con, you know, a year ago.
I think he was at New York Comic Con a year or two ago.
Okay.
I mean, either way, if you said, you know, Chris Hemsworth and blank, whether it's the director or producer or frankly just Chris Hemsworth and some clips, I mean, that would have brought down the house. I mean,
right.
You know, I mean, if you had S.H.I.E.L.D., then Hemsworth, then Walking Dead, if you had Hemsworth on Sunday, I don't know. I mean, it could just be something as simple as individual schedules or what, I do not know. But yeah, I was a little surprised at that. I think that there's a little bit of a, you know, chicken for the egg thing at New York Comic Con. Like, the crowds keep increasing. Does Hollywood feel it is as, you know, it is a huge launching platform? Well, you know, whatever that was, 666 Park Avenue last year had a big splash, and then I think was canceled in about 3 or 4 weeks. So, you know, is that New York Comic Con's fault? I doubt it. Apparently the show was pretty awful. So, but I think there's kind of a little bit less of the automatic, like, November, December, January movie, kind of geeky, must go to New York Comic Con in October. That's not quite there yet, whereas they're going to pull out all the stops for San Diego and literally fly people from halfway around the world to get that splash. So maybe next year, Pete.
We'll see.
So I guess, Pete, with that, we'll just share the contact info. We love it when you leave comments at fantasticgeek.blogspot.com. You can call the listener line, 732-707-1815. Leave a message for up to 3 minutes. You can tweet us at fantasticgeek@gmail.com. That is, of course, fantastic with a PH. And, Pete, I guess I hit everything, right? We love reviews on iTunes as well. And last but not least, Pete, you are, I mean, after Hemsworth on Twitter, there is you. So what is your personal Twitter?
You can find me at Peter, P-I-E-T-E-R, J, Ketelaar, K-E-T-E-L-A-A-R.
And I, of course, apparently can't speak, and I am Looking Back Lost on Twitter. And Pete, it's been nice to step back into kind of a proper pop culture podcast episode. I'm sure we'll do it again soon. And otherwise, we'll be chugging along there with the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast. And I guess that's all for me. Pete, what is your final word?
Goodbye.